Bet the board.
What do you mean you don't bet?
I mean, I don't bet. You know, I don't care. I don't. I never have, and I never will.
Yeah, right.
I'll bet you $20 I can get you gambling before the end of the day.
You owe me $15,000, pal.
Pay him. Pay that man his money.
It's the Bet the Board podcast.
God likes me. He really, really likes me.
In the end, I wound up right back where I started. I could still pick winners, and I could still make money for all kinds of people back home. And why mess up a good thing?
Here's Payne Insider and Todd Furman.
Welcome in to Bet the Board podcast powered by Bet Online. NFL Week 9 here on Thursday, November 3rd. Busy show on tap for you today. I'm Todd Furman. We'll be joined by Payne Insider in just a few moments. Interview with Dave Mason talking about his love for the Patriots, covers baseball, a little political stuff, all your biggest games that Payne and I will break down, including a best bet in one of the marquee matchups of the weekend. And of course, tonight's showdown, and I use the term showdown loosely, between the Bucks and Atlanta Falcons, brought to you courtesy of the American Gaming Association. But Payne, before we start talking football, my friend, wanted to get your take on what we saw. Major League Baseball, Game 7, a little World Series action, the Cubs breaking that 108-year championship drought.
It was a great game. I actually watched it in its entirety, which I can't say about a baseball game since football season started. Pretty happy for Rizzo in the Cubs, no doubt about that. I will say, made some money with the hedge, but would have preferred the Cleveland Indians maintaining that 3-1 lead.
Well, that makes two of us, and I have to offer up a little anecdote for our listeners who, just to kind of illustrate the tunnel vision both you and I get when it comes to football season, we're trading texts during the course of the game, and I can't remember what inning it is. Coco Crisp comes up, and you go, I didn't even know Coco Crisp was a member of the Indians at this point in the season. I did get a kick out of that.
Yeah, I thought I had seen him in a previous playoff game, but it got confirmed when he hit the double down the line. I will say this, it's all NFL, it's all football. Once that season starts, we drop, I would say, baseball right at All-Star break, take advantage of the early soft numbers, specifically on totals. We're basically under early in the season when the weather isn't so hot. Come summer months, those totals, when we're focusing on humidity, air pressure, and all that good stuff, they kind of subside a little bit once it gets warmer in the summer months.
One last thing, Payne, before we close the book on the 2016 Major League Baseball season. We know what the odds said. Cleveland Cavaliers were 10-1 to come back facing a 3-1 series deficit. The Cubs, a 7-2 underdog facing their 3-1 series deficit. In your opinion, which was a bigger comeback as far as overall meaning and implications?
The Cleveland Cavaliers. It's not even close. The one thing about the Cubs, and not to take anything away from it, they were the favorite coming into the season. It kind of felt like they did what they were supposed to do. And it was interesting reading a lot of timelines from Cubs fans, even, friends on Facebook that were Cubs fans. And they were just so pissed early on after losing game one, saying, we need to change how home field advantage is decided. And to me, kind of thinking past the surface, I said to myself, playing in Cleveland is the best thing the Cubs have going for them. They get away from the hometown, the pressure, they're not as tight, but also you can insert Schwarber into your lineup, get him at least 4 at-bats a game, and that is a positive for what at the time was a struggling Cubs offense.
And let's not kid ourselves, Game 7 felt like a Cubs home game with nearly 50% of the crowd, if not more, all donning Cubby blue. So hats off to the Chicago Cubs. We knew how talented this team was. They lived up to expectations and took full advantage of an Indian staff that was extremely depleted. Cleveland, in my opinion, despite us betting them way back in February, if you'd have said they'd had even a shot without Carlos Carrasco, Danny Salazar, and Michael Brantley, I'd have told you were nuts. Payne, a game that nobody said the underdog had a shot in Monday night, the Chicago Bears, as high as +6, number ultimately closes 4. They go out there and dominate the Minnesota Vikings start to finish. Don't want to spend a lot of time on this game, but what can we take away, especially from Jay Cutler's performance after missing the Bears' last few games, and more importantly, the Vikings on the other side, the offensive line ultimately leading to North Turner resigning, and a defense that looked pretty porous from start to finish?
There has never been a question on Jay Cutler's talent. Might have the most talented arm in the NFL. It's a question of, does he care? Is he bought in? Do his teammates like him? Do they want to play for him? And I think we got that element of Jay Cutler on Monday night. We saw the best version of Jay Cutler. And then, you know, we do our reading, and that's kind of why we lean Bears. It's why professionals were on the Bears. Jay Cutler had bought in all week, delivered a pregame speech to the team, and it really got them rallied. But I think in terms of that game having value, we talked about it. This Bears team actually was better in net yards per play than the Vikings. I saw real issues with the Vikings offensive line. That's a clear, clear issue moving forward. And then you just talk about the lack of weapons. I mean, Jerick McKinnon was again out, so you're now on Matt Asiata. There's just not a lot of weapons there for Minnesota, and it's a huge concern. We'll talk about the Vikings in greater detail moving forward. Maybe it's a buy low spot in terms of market value this week. But that Vikings team has a lot of holes.
I think Jordan Howard running, you know, busting off a huge play early in the game really showed that, all right, the Bears aren't going to just fold like a cheap tent. They're going to be competitive. Now, if you'd have told me they'd have dominated that game from start to finish going in, despite knowing Sharp Money had come in on the home underdog, I'd have laughed at you. But clearly, there was nothing fluke-like in that performance.
The bell cow, Jordan Howard, or at least he needs to be the bell cow. Interesting numbers there. I was looking up some stuff after he broke a few tackles. He actually leads NFL running backs in missed tackles per touch. So he's been an added element to that Bears offense. For whatever reason, once Kadeem Carey got healthy, they went to basically a split backfield there for a week or two. I know Langford's back. Forget about Carey. Forget about Langford. Just get Jordan Howard the ball.
I mean, he was outstanding, and you talk about a big decision and what it meant to sportsbooks who struggled all week, and I'm sure they were thrilled not only to get the Bears to cover, but to win that game outright and eliminate any teaser or money line liability. But, Payne, it's now time for our favorite part of the week where Bet the Board's own resident New England Patriots fan enters the fold. We welcome in Dave Mason, and of course, you can always follow Dave on Twitter, at DaveMasonBOL. And Dave, normally we start off with football, but given what we saw last night in Major League Baseball wrapping up what was the most watched Game 7 going all the way back to 1991, what did the betting handle look like, not only for last night's game at BetOnline, but also throughout this entire magical postseason run for the Cubs?
Oh, it was great. I mean, last night it wasn't the only most watched game, but it was the most bet game, baseball game ever here at BetOnline. So the action was great. We ended up needing the over and the Cubs, so we ended the season with a winner. The series odds, that was a loser. We were actually upside down on that. It didn't matter which side won. It was going to be a loser. But future standpoint, each side was a winner. So, no complaints about the action. I mean, the action was really good all postseason, and we did real well in the postseason in general. So we're real happy here with how the baseball season ended.
No, you guys hung an extra innings prop. Did you guys see a lot of action on that as well?
Yeah, we did, and we got killed. you see those things, and it kind of reminds you of the Super Bowl props. Will there be a safety? It's always right around those odds, and mathematically the no is always the value, but people aren't going to lay -800 or -1,000 or whatever it is. They're going to take the +550, +600, and you know, you usually win them, but when they hit, you get it stuck up your tail. So,
Mason, no, transitioning to the NFL a little bit here, we know BetOnline is ecstatic the Patriots aren't playing this week, but we talked a little bit on Twitter. You guys opened a look-ahead line for the big matchup next week against Seattle. Talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, well, I mean, getting our stones busted on Twitter a little bit, and people are, you know, Furman over there sent out a joke tweet about the Patriots. So, I took offense, and then I hit up the lines, guys. Like, hey, we got to open up that Seahawks game early. So we opened at 9.5 and went down to 9, and then right now it's 7.5. So, yeah, Patriots are 7.5-point favorites for next week against the Seahawks. And yes, we get a vacation this week from the Patriots raping.
Well, I mean, Dave, at least you have a week off, so you'll be able to sort things out before the Seahawks come a calling in what'll probably be the marquee matchup next weekend. Now, as we look at this week without the Patriots, clearly tonight's game between the Falcons and Bucks is getting one-sided action. Where else is the public deciding to plunk down their cash as we sit here about 72 hours out?
Yep, as usual, there's going to be some one-sided decisions. As you mentioned, Falcons tonight are big. 81% of the cash is currently on the Falcons. Buccaneers are plus four at home. Cowboys again. That was a big loser last week for the house. Everybody pounded the Cowboys. That was the public's second biggest winner after the Patriots. And again, this week, it looks like 78% of their early money's on the Cowboys. And the Saints, public's on the Saints at the 49ers. And this is very one-sided, but not as much volume as the other games. So you take it with a grain of salt. About 95% of the early money is on the Saints, but that will come down definitely. There's just not a ton of volume on that game yet.
Mason, I know you mentioned some of those games, and I would expect you will get some help from the professionals, but has there been any sharp early money in the NFL?
Some sharp early money. Like I said, broken record time, more the sharp NFL money comes in Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, of course. But we have seen some sharp early money. Browns plus eight, that's plus seven. Jacksonville plus nine, that's currently plus 7.5. Saints minus three, minus 105. That's currently minus three, minus 25. And Denver plus two. That's currently a pick. Also, a little bit of college for an extra bonus. Iowa State plus two. UCLA over 55. Buffalo plus 20. Cal plus 17.
Well, David, you mentioned college. Of course, we have one of the marquee games annually of the college football schedule. LSU playing host to Alabama. Looking at Bet Online's number, we're talking about LSU right around a touchdown underdog. What have you guys seen there as far as betting trends early in the week?
First of all, it's some great action. There's more money bet on that game so far than any of Sunday's NFL games. So that's going to look like it's going to be a huge game for us. And we will be LSU fans. We're talking about 84% of early money is already on Bama. So, yeah, we'll be huge LSU fans Saturday night.
And transitioning once again, we know the election is Tuesday, and we've talked about you being loaded with Trump futures. Over the last week, we've seen the reopening of the FBI investigation, some WikiLeaks articles. Over the last 7 to 10 days, how have we seen the presidential odds fluctuate?
Well, a couple of weeks ago, we're sitting here and everybody thought it was a done deal and the game was over. Clinton was up to minus 600, and you know, a lot of the pundits were saying that that's even good value on her, but you know, people were keeping the odds low because we're so buried on Trump, and then all that stuff came out and she's down to minus 280, and people continue to bet Trump. They bet Trump every day. I mean, we've been buried since the get-go on him, and that's no difference now. I mean, our loss on him is twice as much as the win on Clinton. So yeah, and we opened up some state by state odds, and they're burying Trump there. Just looking at a few of them, Florida, 75% is on 75% of the bets are on Trump at minus 115. Ohio, 82% of the bets are on Trump at minus 225. North Carolina, 82% of the bets are on Trump at even. So the public's just all in on Trump, so we're going to be huge Clinton fans come election night.
And if the public wants to try and get down on whether election props, NFL games, or sit and wait until the Patriots take on the Seahawks next weekend, what kind of promos can they expect at the shop being loyal Bet the Board listeners?
Well, we still have the 75% welcome bonus out there for your listeners. If you do not have a Bet Online account, or even if you have one but you never funded, head over to the site and use promo code 75BTB when you deposit at least $50 to get a 75% welcome bonus. And if you already have a BetOnline account, we have a one-time reload bonus, 50% reload bonus. Just use promo code 50BTB. If you want to load up your account for the next couple of weeks, you can get a max bonus of $1,000 on either of those. All the terms and conditions are found at promotions.betonline.ag/BetTheBoard. So head on over there and get loaded up for the weekend.
Dave, thanks as always. We know we ran the gamut today. Baseball, NFL, college football, a little bit of political talk. Thanks as always for being so gracious, and we appreciate all you do for our loyal Bet the Board listeners over there at BetOnline.
All right, guys. Have a great weekend.
That's Dave Mason from Bet Online. You can follow him on Twitter if you're not already doing so at Dave Mason BOL. Payne, biggest takeaway from me, from what Dave shared with us, not only about the election and some of the NFL action that we anticipated, so much betting handle already on LSU-Alabama. I didn't think that, given some of LSU's early season struggles, we would see this game create the buzz it has among sportsbook clientele.
It's the biggest game of the entire weekend, I think, in terms of college football. It's that rivalry, LSU-Alabama. It's the night game, probably the greatest home field advantage when you talk about LSU at night. That place is going to be rocking. It'll be interesting to see if Hurts can have continued success on the road. We know this LSU team, though, extremely, extremely athletic. It'll be interesting to see if Hurts can get outside on a lot of those runs he's been getting outside on this year. And I think the biggest takeaway here is, can Etling do enough? Can he play smart enough to move that offense just enough through the air? We know some injury concerns in the secondary for Alabama that will, I think, loom large this weekend.
All it may take is one big pass play over the top to open up some running room for Leonard Fournette. Should be a great game Saturday night to set the table for NFL Week 9, and not a ton of attractive games, but that's not going to stop us from digging into the meat and potatoes here on the Bet the Board podcast. If you're not already subscribed to the podcast, don't know what the hell you're waiting for, SoundCloud, iTunes, or check us out at bettheboardpodcast.com. And of course, you can follow the podcast at Bet the Board Pod on Twitter. Some great swag and other things and ways for you, the loyal listeners out there, to show your appreciation. We do thank you for everything you guys do for us each and every week. The feedback was outstanding, and the Halloween costumes definitely put a smile on Payne's face and mine. Payne, we're looking at the Vikings. You mentioned earlier this could be a good opportunity to buy low on a Minnesota team that the whole country saw kind of embarrass themselves, for a lack of a better term, at Soldier Field on Monday night. Minnesota at home, a 6-point favorite at BetOnline, total 41. The Detroit Lions come a-calling, and the Lions, a national audience didn't see them, but they didn't look much better for their trip down to Houston to take on the Texans.
Yeah, the Lions have not been great, but who's been really bad is this Minnesota Vikings team since their bye week. Just 4.9 yards per play on offense. Only Tampa and San Francisco worse over that stretch. I see the Sam Bradford haters. They've resurfaced. They've come out of mom's basement, and they're screaming, "I told you so." I think it's a little bit ridiculous, though. You look at some of those metrics for Sam Bradford. He's still the 8th most efficient quarterback out of 34 qualifiers. They've lost 2 starters from the offensive line. Alex Boone left the Monday night game early. He's extremely questionable. We know Adrian Peterson went down, Jerick McKinnon down. You look at their first-round draft pick, Treadwell. He's played 11 snaps all season. He's just not getting a ton of help. But Bradford's been better than Aaron Rodgers, better than Philip Rivers, better than Big Ben, Super Bowl Flacco so far this year. He's just got zero help right now. Maybe getting back home where they have a huge home field advantage. And maybe an added boost in the locker room, an uplifting kind of feeling, seeing Adrian Peterson walk around this week without a limp, no brace. He could be back sooner than expected. He's vowed that he will only take the 8 weeks on the IR and come back. So for fantasy guys, maybe it's worth picking up Adrian Peterson if he's been released. You kind of stash him for a few weeks. Maybe it's a nice flyer. I know the offensive line isn't good, but when you can pick up potentially a second round draft pick off the waiver wire, and we know Adrian Peterson in general, it's worth a flyer.
And you mentioned the Vikings and all the Bradford haters coming out of the woodwork. I don't care if Joe Montana, Tom Brady, or Aaron Rodgers is behind that offensive line. They're going to look pretty pedestrian when they're under duress as soon as they take a snap. So I think Minnesota has to figure that out. When you look at the Vikings offense, though, Payne, with North Turner's resignation, does that change the way you approach it with Pat Shurmur, the one now calling plays?
I think this is a wait-and-see kind of approach, just to see what they do in Game 1. We know Norv Turner. You like to try to get the ground game going, especially on first down, became overly predictable. His offense is predicated on being able to run the ball, and then you play action off of that deep down the field or over the middle to the tight end. So he became very predictable. So I know that offensive line hasn't been good, but you don't do the offense any favors when your offensive line isn't good, and then you basically just hand the other team the playbook and say, "We're going to run it on first down every single time.
And when we look at the Lions, they've now fallen to dead last in defensive efficiency by a lot of popular websites out there. Middle of the pack offensively. How do we handicap what we've seen from this team, especially away from home?
It's very tough. This Lions team kind of overachieving, and Matt Stafford has really been the glue this year. Came into camp 15 pounds. He had lost in the offseason. Put things on his shoulders. He's been the saving grace. I know we talked about Matthew Stafford in a negative light, negative connotation, so to speak, over the years, being an underachiever, kind of being that Jay Cutler heir apparent with the arm talent, but not much else. He's been the saving grace for the Lions, but again, the offense has struggled a little bit on the road. They did get Eric Ebron back last week, so that should help some things. No semblance of a ground game, so it's pass, 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 pass for the Lions. That can become pretty predictable when you're facing this Vikings defense. Hopefully, they haven't worn down. They spent a lot of time on the field. But I know maybe you were looking at an angle in this game just a little bit, focusing on the Lions team total.
Yeah, I think if you're going to try and make a case here, and of course, as we're sitting here recording, Payne, I'm seeing the Vikings line tick down. Now 5.5-point favorites at BetOnline from the six. It's amazing to try and see how quickly they jump off the bandwagon for a team they couldn't get enough of on Monday night. Now they want no part of them with them going home. And I'm not sure there is a massive disparity power rating wise between the Lions and Bears shifting a venue. Vikings backs against the wall after two bad performances. But I think if you're looking to lay the points with the Vikings, that's contingent on the defense rising to the occasion. So if you are able to get a 17, I don't think we'll see a 17.5 in the market. I'll make a slight case for going under on that team total. 16.5, though, for me would be a no-fly zone.
Yeah, for sure. That makes some sense when you talk about the Lions offensively. Kind of, you know, if you liked under full game, you get rid of the Lions' putrid defense a little bit. Hopefully, you know, the Vikings have some success in terms of at least maintaining possession against that Lions defense, which inevitably helps the team total under on the Lions.
And from one divisional rivalry to another, the New York Giants play host to the Philadelphia Eagles in an NFC East showdown. The Giants fresh off the bye. 2.5-point favorites at BetOnline. We did see this number open at a full field goal. Also some under money trickling into the market. 44 down to 43 at BOL.
Be very, very careful here. I would not be running to tail the move on the screen on the Eagles. Not in love with the Giants by any stretch, and I'm not sure if, you know, first-year head coach Ben McAdoo can capitalize on this extra prep time. I will say, though, health-wise, the bye came at the right time for the Giants. If you look at that secondary, it's back, it's intact. Janoris Jenkins, he's been fantastic holding down the fort, but Rogers Cromartie is finally healed. Eli Apple is healed. Darian Thompson returned to practice Monday, claims he's going to play. So that defense should be intact. Everybody should be available there. We talk about Philadelphia. They're extremely slow paced on offense. Combine that with what kind of appears to be an inability to stretch the field. I think there was only one pass attempt in that Sunday night game against the Cowboys that traveled more than 14 yards in the air. Quietly, McAdoo has talked about commitment to the ground game. So, as you alluded to, a little under money with all those factors in play.
Yeah, they've really lacked creativity. It makes you question the hire of McAdoo, and he's ready to try and get his team to perform on the biggest stage. Right here in your backyard, and I guess mine for this weekend, down here in Miami, where the Dolphins are playing host to the New York Jets.
It has ticked down because I think most believe this will be a trench battle. Will Gase throw a wrench in the perceived plan? Ajayi has been fantastic the last few games, and this was really interesting to me. He leads the NFL with 4.12 yards after first contact. To put that in perspective, the next closest running back is Le'Veon Bell at 3.75 yards after first contact. I think the question again is, Adam Gase, viewed as this next great offensive mind, he's had 2 weeks to prepare. Will he go with what has had success the last two games, and that's pound the rock? Or will he kind of look at film and say, you know what, this Jets defense, that vaunted front four, number one in the NFL, surrendering just 3.3 yards per rush attempt, and then see the Jets secondary that's allowing 7.7 yards per pass attempt, tied for 29th in the NFL, and say, I'm going to go a little more pass heavy this week. So that'll be the key for this game, to watch that scheme, that game plan. You also definitely want to check the injury report. At least through yesterday, Nick Mangold, Ryan Clady have not practiced, and those are huge cogs on that Jets offensive line. Muhammad Wilkerson also has not practiced, so you want to make sure you follow those injuries throughout the rest of the week.
You mentioned Adam Gase potentially going to a more pass-heavy offense, knowing the weakness of the Jets has been that secondary. Is Ryan Tannehill the kind of quarterback that we can trust at this point in his career if Gase elects to throw the ball around the yard 35 to 40 times?
No. No. It's pretty simple. You know, we've kind of touched on this, and there's kind of three filters for quarterbacks. Do you hinder your team? Are you kind of just a stable guy, or do you propel your team to the next level? And I think Tannehill fits that middle class. He doesn't hinder or hurt the team, but for this Dolphins team to take the next step, make the playoffs for the first time in Tannehill's career, he's going to need everything perfect around him. He's going to need that brick wall offensive line. He's going to need a run game. He's going to need a defense that steps up. So he's not going to win you games, especially if you ask him to throw it 35 to 40 times. I'm not sure Gase can do that, because if you go away from the ground game and that's the reason you lose, the media is going to be all over him. So I think it's an early dose of potential ground game, maybe some plays designed in the passing game, a short passing attack off the success of the ground game in the last few weeks. But they're going to have to, you know, give it to Jay Ajayi, see if they can create some space on the ground despite this Jets front four being awesome. And Casey Rogers, Todd Bowles, back to Miami. This is going to be a big game for them.
Anything worth attacking maybe on the total? We've seen that number tick down and drop. 44, you do have to lay under $1.15 at BetOnline.
You know, the one thing here is we have seen this total drop. It's the division game. They would expect Ajayi to run the ball a bunch here. And then there's potential for some rain. I have seen the forecast saying wind. But one thing, I heard someone talk about this. One thing you want to factor in is the new stadium renovations for the Dolphins. They've built this semi-roof kind of thing that seems to be doing a good job blocking out that wind. so much so that the corners of the end zones, fans have been kind of complaining that there's really no ventilation. There's no moving air, and they're working on providing some ventilation there in the corner. So it's blocking a lot of the wind. So if you're looking at the wind report and you're seeing like this 18-mile-an-hour cross-field wind here, not going to be as big as a factor with the new stadium renovation. So I'm not running to bet the over, but I'm certainly not agreeing with the under movement at this point.
From early kickoffs on the East Coast to a late afternoon showdown on the West Coast, where New Orleans, fresh off that, I won't even call it an upset. We knew it was coming against Seattle a week ago. A field goal favorite in San Francisco, you do have to lay $1.25 if you want to bet. Public profile, about 95% of the action coming in on Sean Payton's team. Clearly, this number will level out, and the volume won't be nearly as substantial as what we've seen with some of these afternoon games. Total here from 51 out to 52. San Francisco have any semblance of life as a home underdog with extra time to prepare here?
I don't have anything on this game yet, but it is one of the more interesting games to talk about, especially if you love markets and you love monitoring markets. And so Mason not only alluded to the public being all over the Saints here, but there has been professional money on the Saints. The question is the intent. Is it really going to be a Saints position, or is it to get the train rolling, so to speak? Let's get that money into the market early, let the public pile on, and then all of a sudden, game day, do I come back in on a position with the San Francisco 49ers? The question becomes is, can some of the professionals be patient? Will they let this tick to 4.5, or will they get a little antsy and take San Francisco? The one thing that you will have to factor in here for San Francisco is 2 weeks for Kaepernick. Is he focused on football? If he is, you would think 2 weeks in the system, a little bit more ingrained in things. Is that a benefit? The defense, we know, has worn down over the last few weeks. They really needed that bye. And then at home, they've just played much better. We've seen this San Francisco team get out to early leads. They got out to an early 14-point lead against Tampa, an early 14-point lead against Dallas. So that's going to be the key here. Can they get out to an early lead and hold on? I would think at some point this gets to a number where professional bettors are eventually buying San Francisco.
I like what you did there on the foreshadowing. Can professional bettors be patient with a home underdog? It clearly had an impact on a game that we'll get to later on in this. Two games going 6-16 against the number, that largely attributed to their inability to get of Big 12 caliber. And when we look at the Saints, clearly this situation, they do have the defending Super Bowl champions coming into the Superdome next week. You mentioned that 4-point home underdog here against the Saints. They were only a 1.5-point underdog against the Dallas Cowboys season. When we look at, I'll call it what it is, I think it's the most interesting game pain. I've seen some over money come into the market on this particular matchup. Green Bay now a 7-point favorite at BetOnline. There are plenty of 7.5s out there. Total in this game, open 52.5, out to 54. For me, I look at this and go, it's awfully difficult to lay this kind of number with Green Bay, but Indianapolis dealing with some injury concerns of their own.
Absolutely agree with you, and honestly, the only thing I'm constantly checking on this game is the status of T.Y. Hilton. We talked about the over on Monday. It steamed up 2 points since we left Monday's podcast. We talked about the Colts plus 7.5 as well. Both of those I could only consider if the top horse for the Colts offense plays, and you're going to have to check, and there's a real shot T.Y. Hilton doesn't play. I know you got Moncrief back last week. That's an added dimension. On the other side of the ball, there's kind of an interesting development that seems to be going on. Has Mike McCarthy kind of surrendered to Aaron Rodgers and said, it's on you, bud. We're going to let you improvise. We're going to let you lead us to the promised land. There's been some internal issues between the two. It's why McCarthy basically resigned himself as play caller last year. Took those reins back, and there was some butting of heads early on this year. Those were kind of the internal issues we've been alluding to early in the season for the Packers. It feels like he's kind of just saying, Aaron's my best player. Let's let him make plays. It's tough, though. I have been pretty impressed, especially with the Packers last week, what they did offensively. I know it was Atlanta's defense, but there is no semblance of a ground game there. None whatsoever. And so when you're just pass, 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 I don't care how bad your defense is, it's just tough to score points here. So at 54, potentially trending towards 55, not knowing if T.Y. Hilton's there, not knowing if Ty Montgomery's there, it could be tough for me to even look over at this point.
When you mention injuries, Randall Cobb expecting him to be out there for Green Bay, or safe to assume that he'll be sidelined for yet another week?
Don't have a lot there on that specific thing. My hunch would be that he tries to get back out there, but don't have anything concrete on Wednesday. Today's kind of the big practice day. Thursday, Friday, those are the two big days. I know we've talked about the new change in designations for injuries throughout the course of the week and what teams kind of use as a status marker, but it's really required people to do their digging in terms of, has this guy practiced on Thursday? Has he practiced on Friday? Is he limited? Is he kind of a full participant, despite what that questionable tag says? So today's the big day, and so I'll be monitoring injuries today and tomorrow, big time.
I wanted to get your thoughts and see if there were any other football contests that may have piqued your interest as far as side or totals, some interesting tidbits our Bet the Board listeners should consider before walking to the window.
I know no one's going to like it, and Mason talked about it. Very sharp money on Jacksonville. You get embarrassed on national TV. You get your offensive coordinator fired after a lackluster performance. You get extra time, maybe getting away from Jacksonville helps some things. And at some point, there's going to be value on Jacksonville. And when you look this week, and you're talking about Nick Foles as a backup, Justin Houston not being ready, Jamal Charles officially being sidelined, Spencer Ware dealing with a concussion, I would think at the worst case, the back door is going to be open here for Jacksonville. So that's something you're going to want to monitor. The Pittsburgh-Baltimore game. I know we really haven't talked about it because the game was off the board. I did see some opening prices. For me, if Big Ben does go, which appears he's going to try to give it a go, after, you know, a little less than 3 weeks, I want nothing to do with Pittsburgh, especially if they open a favorite. My feeling is you're going to see them open probably 1.5, 2-point favorite. At that point, I think Baltimore makes a fantastic teaser leg. So those are the kind of things I would be looking for.
Very interesting. And I think a game that'll really open some eyes, Tennessee at San Diego. The Chargers haven't exactly been great over the better part of 60 minutes. Deserved a much better fate last week against Denver. I know that's a game that I'll be interested to keep tabs on and try and really assess what direction both of those teams are going in over the second half of the season. AFC West, we mentioned Broncos and Oakland, probably the biggest game of the day. Yet another great game that we're given on Sunday Night Football. You're looking at this game right now. I guess this is the $100 million question. Which unit will cave? We know it's strength. How do we see Trevor Siemian and a Denver offense without C.J. Anderson that bogged down for stretches a week ago?
C.J. Anderson's a big loss. Now, you know, the downgrade to Booker isn't that significant, but it is a slight downgrade. But then it downgrades two positions because you basically had two backs battling each other fresh every time they were on the field and basically trying to win the starting job with every single carry. So it became a real competition there. I think that's a big loss. Also, Booker dealing with a shoulder injury. So is he 100% healthy? I doubt it. The big thing for me here is watching Siemian. Yes, we talked about this. He is an upgrade over what they had last year in Peyton Manning. He scares me. He really does. If you watch the game against San Diego, and if you're a guy that doesn't like to watch the games, you just want the numbers to tell you and paint pictures. If you actually look at the box score, that Siemian interception wasn't his fault that got returned for a pick six, drop pass, alligator arms. But he should have had two more interceptions in that game. Casey Hayward should have picked off Siemian in the red zone, should have been a 95-yard interception return. In the green zone, he planted another ball right in a defender's chest, a linebacker's chest that should have been picked off that was not. He has had some issues once they've gotten down to the red zone and space has been confined. He doesn't have a great arm. He doesn't have a lot of talent. Simeon's a smart guy. So when the space starts to tighten a little bit and doesn't have that arm strength and he's starting to, you know, fit balls in there that he probably shouldn't, that's why he's had these lapses in the red zone, so to speak. And I was looking at some of these success rates. This Broncos offense, 19th in success rate in the red zone in comparison to Siemian being fourth most successful anywhere else on the field in overall quarterback. So he's really struggling in the red zone. When you go on the road, you're just not going to be able to kick field goals here. The one thing that I do want to, you know, talk about this game, and I think we'll eventually see some pro money on the Broncos, but this Oakland team, not to use the NBA as a comparison, but we see the West Coast teams going out to the East Coast for that 5-6-7 game road trip, and they're away from home. They're away from their personal lives. They're away from the old lady friend who they got to warm back up when they get home, and they got to worry about their bills and their personal lives. This Oakland team didn't come back. They spent, you know, last week on the East Coast, hung out in Jacksonville. So they've been gone now about 10 days from home. So is that focus completely there? We've also seen these young teams trying to take the next step, trying to move the franchise forward in these big games. This is that game. This is the game. Is Oakland for real? We've seen Jacksonville. We've seen Tennessee stub their toe in this spot. It'll be interesting to see if Oakland stubs their toe or really becomes a contender at 7-2 beating the Broncos.
That's what I wanted to ask you about, Payne. I'm glad you brought it up, talking about how much this game potentially means to Oakland to take that next step and really announce their arrival as viable contenders, not only in the AFC West, but in the conference as a whole. Do you ultimately think that pressure, you have to go through these type of experiences more than once or twice, where Denver comes in, they take the workmanlike effort. We know that the strength of that defense is going to neutralize Oakland's ability to stretch the field and really potentially force the Raiders out of their comfort zone to run the football against that Denver weakness, which has been in the interior of their defensive line.
This is the big game for Oakland. You know, the Broncos, Super Bowl champions, they've dominated that West division. This is the one that puts them on the map. I know they're 6-2, but we've had a lot of question marks surrounding Oakland. We know what the market has said. We know what the analytical numbers say. And still, last week against Tampa Bay Buccaneers, that was the first time in 8 weeks they had outgained an opponent. That was the first time in 8 weeks they showed that they were the better team on the field. They are still at the bottom of the league in net yards per play. The question mark here for the Broncos is Talib. Is he going to play? He's got the lower back injury. That's an annoying injury. So he's going to need to be out there. The Broncos did have their center back last week playing with the hip injury, so that's another one to monitor. I would think he gives it a go. Brandon Marshall on defense, he was out last week. I think he probably gives it a go this week as well. So I know the public right now on Denver a little bit. We'll see how that, how those bet splits even out come game day, but I would envision, we've already seen it, but I think probably Denver closes a small favorite here.
And when we talk about games, I know we've kind of taken a similar format each and every episode, letting you pick the game that we're going to give out as the best potential investment. It's done quite well for us thus far. Should we go with a split position, so to speak, a little half unit play on the Denver Broncos at pick before this number ticks out to them being a favorite and a half position on Jacksonville at 7.5?
Look at you. Look at you.
I'm a man of the people. I don't
folding
like
folding under pressure I don't, already.
You know, you like to put the weight of the world on my shoulders, and here I am as the measly host. And it's a little bit uncharted territory. We typically gravitate towards the ugly ducklings of the world. It's a little bit unique for us to be on a road team getting a lot of public support in the middle of the week.
I will endorse Denver, but we did change some things up a little bit this week. So if this does lose, I hope and pray you get some listeners just pummeling your timeline.
Oh, I'm sure I will. The listeners love to pummel my timeline anyways in regards to all this stuff. So this would just give them added fuel for the fire to really come after me if they go, look at you. You stepped on Payne's toes.
What we're really doing here is, let's just say we're the Tennessee Titans. We're Mike Mularkey. You decided to not give it to your horse. You decided to not give it to DeMarco Murray. And instead, you're acting as Marcus Mariota throwing it all over the park here.
Seattle Seahawks in the Super Bowl on first and goal trying to throw the ball instead of handing it off to Marshawn Lynch is what you're getting at.
Accurate. Accurate and probably a better comparison.
Would you like to endorse Jacksonville?
No. Nope. Nope, we're going Denver.
You don't want Let's to endorse Jacksonville on the podcast? I mean, you tried to make a...
I already bet yeah. Jacksonville. Our listeners could make worse wagers.
Yeah, I mean, you tried to make a stunning endorsement there. I wasn't sure if we were going to delve into, we should take the Ravens as a teaser leg at +8.5 and figure out who to try them to. So I wasn't quite sure where they're going. Tampa and Atlanta. Carolina and Los Angeles. We talked about this game on Monday's pod. The Rams off a bye. Number moves a full field goal. Do we think Carolina's back starting to get their feet under him? Or is Cam complaining about feeling unsafe out there? The Rams defensive line having extra time to get healthy. Baked into this number, maybe creating value on the home underdog.
Always an angle from you. I will say this. I know you got your stopwatch going. You're looking at this 38 minutes. You're trying to get me for a full 60 here. We're just going to throw more on the plate.
I mean, Christ, I pay you enough money. We may as well get full 60 out of you. You're not out here working. You're not out here working special teams, just kicking field goals and punting.
I will say, in terms of the Carolina Panthers getting Jonathan Stewart back, getting Cam fully healthy, that added dimension of the ground game, that physical style of football, having more efficiency in the red zone, maybe this is where the Carolina Panthers kind of take off on their season. If this did get to 3.5, though, I think we'd have some buy on the Rams here as well. Looked like Carolina, with the bye week, maybe figured some things out in the secondary. Actually got a pass rush this past week against Arizona. If they can get the pass rush going, that's definitely a big help to that weak secondary. So we have seen some under money on this game. That is very real. The under money on this game, and again at 3.5, probably makes some sense to look at LA if it does get there. And then when you look at that total, you know, coming down and potentially some value, and I know this isn't going to, you know, the math guys aren't going to love this, but you know, a potential teaser leg there with Baltimore, you know, if the Rams do get to 3.5, taking them to double digits through that 7, through that 10.
It makes the most sense, and we can't really argue with the results. And folks, show us that love. Show us that support. Support the podcast. Look at the swag with the holidays coming up. 6 outstanding t-shirt designs. Only a few bucks. Comes to you about what, Payne? What's the turnaround time on those? About 7 to 10 days before folks can be wearing them around their favorite watering holes, celebrating wins prematurely with about 8 minutes to go in the fourth quarter?
See, I saw you did your thing there on Twitter the other day where it's talk out of your rectum, but no, that's not the turnaround time. We're trying to get these things out on Tuesdays, 3-day shipping with the tracking number. My feeling is we do the shipments once a week, but if you order, you know, Monday night, you're going to have that thing by the end of the same week.
And A special little gift now for those folks looking to order yes. t-shirts. We won't tell
a
you.
A little surprise yep, gift.
We won't tell you what the gift is. And Payne, you mentioned professional bettors not being patient, waiting for the best of the number. And that's the scenario we've seen tonight at Raymond James Stadium, where the Falcons are now 3.5-point favorites at BetOnline for their trip down to take on the Tampa Bay Bucks. Total in this game, 51. Well, two things, Payne, that I want to throw out there before we get your analysis. When we look at Atlanta, this team has done nothing but burn money at the window when installed as a favorite, including last week against Green Bay. Over the last three seasons, 3-16 against the number in the chalk roll. Tampa, on the other side, they've been absolutely abysmal in their own building, 5-14 against the spread over their last 19 games played at RJ. Something has to give here, and I'm not sure what it's going to be.
About 30 minutes ago, I was kind of hinting that Mason would get some help on this game. And while recording, he's getting some help. Fours, there's still some four out there. But a lot of 3.5 now. I know professional money kind of ran to take Tampa early in the week. They were able to get plus 3.5.
Tampa, bitches! Tampa!
And it just didn't matter. The market wasn't going to hold it. We're now looking at this standalone primetime game right now. The Falcons garnering 85% of the total tickets. It's as if this game is foregone. The Friday paper is out and the Falcons are victorious. Obviously a little revenge from earlier in the season when Tampa and Jameis went on the road and beat Atlanta. I will say this, though. When you look at this, Tevin Coleman out. A lot of injuries. Jacquizz Rodgers officially out. Doug Martin not quite ready to come back yet. It looks like a mix of Anton Smith, Peyton Barber, and maybe even a sprinkle of Mike James. The Bucs signed him this week. I would envision it's probably a hot hand scenario. Dirk Koetter, though, this is kind of what scares me. He's been bad, unimaginative, kind of like McAdoo. They retained him because he was Jameis' guy. They didn't want Jameis learning a new system in year two of the NFL. He's not doing anything to help Jameis. You would think maybe some quick, easy throws on first and second down. Instead, it has been ground and pound on first down, then hope Jameis can kind of bail you out in these third and long situations. A young quarterback who's kind of had the propensity to try to squeeze balls into spaces he shouldn't. And to kind of put this in perspective, the last 4 weeks in the first half of games, Tampa Bay has run the ball on first down 73% of the time. It makes Norv Turner, who basically just got fired, they nicely let him resign, into this picture, who's Minnesota's at number two. 64% of the time they're running on first down the last 4 weeks. And that's why Norv Turner's gone. If you incorporate first and second down play calling in the first half, Tampa Bay runs it a combined 62% of the time. So you got to get some quick early throws, not be so predictable, not make your young quarterback put the weight of the world on his shoulders in third and long situations. That's going to be the key tonight. And I'm not sure Dirk Koetter is good enough, especially in a short week.
Can they possibly be that predictable knowing that they're down to what amounts to a fourth and fifth string running back with Anton Smith and Peyton Barber?
You just love dumping on Mike Knowles, the beloved Anton Smith. It was like I'll a five-star recruit at the time.
You know what? I'll dump on whoever I damn well please. Florida State, Miami, Florida. If there ever are any NFL alums that get to the league from my alma mater, aside from Coach Bill Belichick, I'll dump on them. I'll take my shots at whoever I want, Payne, and you're not going to stop me, damn it.
I will say this. It doesn't really require a game plan. It requires calling the right plays on first and second down.
How about execution?
That laminated sheet there. The left column has some runs. The right column has some passes. Let's dial up that right side just a touch
when we look
more.
And
that's going to be the key.
The Atlanta-Tampa game, judging by the sounds of it, what you and I have uncovered, really doesn't make a whole lot of sense to force a wager tonight, if you ask me. I'm not sure if you had very different sentiments here.
No, not forcing a wager. I will not be on this game. Now I say that it's 11:15 and it's a market. I don't know what I'm eating for lunch. It's possible I end up on this game in the next 8 hours. The sharp side's going to be Tampa Bay here. And four was the buy point, and that's what's currently available now. There's probably worse bets you could make in your life. We're not going to endorse that. Maybe slight lean that way. Again, movie and popcorn kind of bet. and you just need some action, I'd probably lean towards Tampa Bay, but at this point, I can't envision myself having a single penny invested.
Yeah, just not enough to really try and get you to the window there. Some better and bigger fish, more importantly, to fry on Sunday, since you have officially put the pressure on me to
keep... Was that a pun on you burying the Jets this week?
I mean, I was going to try. Like you said, I did play Denver. I took one locally. Expect that Denver to close as the favorite. A little bit of uncharted territory being on such a public side, but I think ultimately the defense rises to the occasion. However, as I said, if Aqib Talib isn't out there, changes the handicap completely. And of course, like I do every week, when you tell me you love a game like Jacksonville, as much as you can love the much maligned Jaguars, have a small investment there, and maybe even looking to dabble Monday night in Buffalo, Seattle. But for our podcast listeners, they're just going to have to tune in Monday to see what direction we're looking to go when Seattle plays host to the Buffalo Bills.
Yeah. You can wrap this thing up yet. They don't need to hear from me anymore.
You think they've had enough? They've had their fill of Pain and Cider for this week?
Yeah.
All right, just
more so I've had my fill of you.
Yeah,
so.
I figured. I mean, that was bound to happen 20 minutes of the podcast. So
I'm the nice guy, so I don't directly put it out there. I kind of navigate around the situation, yeah. but I figured you'd be able to read what I was thinking.
Yeah, you can blow smoke up some of the people's asses some of the time, and you've done so effectively on this podcast. As we sit
that
here,
sounded
NFL
like a Chris
met.
Farley thing about sticking your head up a butcher's ass. You kind of mulled that saying there.
I mean, I know the saying that you're referencing, but no, it hadn't crossed my mind. Either way, this podcast has officially gone off the rails. So when that happens, it's time to close up shop. So for Pain Insider, follow him on Twitter at Pain Insider. I am Todd Furman. You can follow me there as well at Todd Furman. Bet the Board Podcast at Bet the Board, bettheboardpodcast.com. Sign up for the podcast, SoundCloud, iTunes, and anywhere else your little podcast hearts desire. Check out the swag, a special gift in time for the holidays. Come along with every t-shirt purchase. And hopefully, come Sunday evening, we'll see you at the windows.